Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. Exciting time in franchising this time of year as we're leading into the IFA convention, and we just came out of Franchise Expo South in Miami, Florida. Joining me today as my guest will be Bob Colman. Some of you might know him from the Colman Report, and we'll be introducing Bob here in just a bit, but I'd also like to introduce my co-producer, none other than Joe Caruso.
Hey, Paul. Great to be on the show again. We have a terrific guest, wrote a great book, Money, Money Everywhere, but not a drop for Main Street, and it's going to be on a topic today that is near and dear to franchisors and franchisees, and how do they get more stores built, how do they get more units open, and where do they get the money?
Big topic and thoughts on everybody's mind in franchising and small business in general. And we also have some interesting guests coming on in the future, so I'll touch base on one that I spoke with, Stephanie Chandler. An author and speaker. She's an author of several books, including Own Your Own Niche, Hype-Free Internet Marketing Tactics to Establish Authority in Your Field. Another one, Promote Your Service Business, From Entrepreneur to Infopreneur. Really interesting, a nice little light change of pace on things that are dear to my heart. Of course, everything digital that's going on out there, and I know there was a lot of interest in that at some of the symposium seminars at this weekend's Franchise Expo South. Also, coming up, well, we have a few other interesting guests, very IFA-focused. Why don't you tell us, Joe, a little bit about those guests?
Well, we're going to have a really, really interesting show on the 9th with Dina Dwyer Owens, who was just on Undercover Boss this past week, and everybody that I've talked to in the franchise community and the traffic on Facebook and on Twitter, I don't think there was a dry eye in any room, man cave or whatever, watching TV, watching that show. It was a terrific, terrific show. She's going to tell us about her experience on being on the show, her perspective with the various franchise brands that they have, Mr. Rooter, Mr. Appliance, and a whole sort of a whole array of other franchises, because they have 1,600 franchises in their 1,600 franchisees in their portfolio. So that's going to be very, very exciting. And then right after, we have another great show. We have Steve Caldera from the IFA on the 16th. And he's going to be talking about the franchise convention, IFA conference. He's going to be talking about the upcoming Small Business Lending Summit that will be in its second year, that's put on by the International Franchise Association in conjunction with the National Restaurant Association and one or more of the various banking associations. So lending is front and center, and that's why today's show is so appropriate, and we'll be visiting with Bob Colman just shortly.
And then also on the 23rd, I met up with Nancy Weingartner, the editor of Franchise Times, and Nancy has agreed to be back on our show for the third time on February 23rd, kind of giving us some of her perspective coming out of the IFA convention and leading into the Small Business Lending Summit. So we really got some power-packed shows coming up. And also, just to give people some insight, coming up at the end of March and through May and into the beginning, through April and the beginning of May, will be our third annual Franchise Legal Series. And, of course, Joe and I will be relaying some details and sharing some details with respect to guests and topics over the next few weeks. Again, talking about a lot of things IFA, just about 10 minutes before today's show, I received some correspondence from Matthew Haller, the Senior Director of Communications at the International Franchise Association, and you can find his correspondence on my blog at fmdpro.com. But I'll share with you, he said this year the IFA's Technology Summit will feature speakers from two of our newest members, and that being Facebook and Google. I think we've heard of them. Both organizations understand the franchising world has unique requirements and challenges and would like to better understand these unique issues. So Matt and the IFA have set up a feedback site that was created as a simple one-way communication channel for IFA members to submit their suggestions on what they would like to see each of these speakers from Google and Facebook address during the Tech Summit at this year's convention. I certainly would encourage everyone to either go on the IFA site. I've populated through the Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn sites. It's also on my site at fmdpro.com as well. There's various links. Fill out the questionnaire and submit it. I think this is a prime way of being able to be heard. Joe, today, as we said, we've got Bob Coleman. He's the country's foremost expert on franchise and small business lending. He's a frequent guest on Fox Business News. He's often quoted by a variety of financial media outlets, including the Wall Street Journal, Bloomberg, Forbes, CNN Money, and the New York Times. He's the editor of the Coleman Report, a weekly small business lending newsletter, and the publisher of Small Business Loan Underwriting Guides, along with his great book, as you mentioned, Joe, Money, Money Everywhere, But Not a Drop for Main Street. Bob, welcome to Franchise Today.
Paul, thank you very much. It's an honor to be here. I have to confess, though, I have mixed feelings. I'm looking out my window here in Southern California, and we're going to hit 80 degrees. So if there's a long silence, you know I'm outside enjoying the fresh air. But anyway, no, I am here, and I'm honored to be here. Thank you very much for the invitation.
Well, we really appreciate you being on the show. I know we were supposed to have you on before the holidays and had some scheduling conflicts, and I really appreciate you taking the time and being with us today. And you talk about hot weather. Certainly the climate can't be any hotter than it is on franchise and small business lending. And so I'm really anxious to learn more about your perspective and insight on that very, very hot topic. And of course, as I said, you are famous for the Coleman Report, which, as we know, is the most comprehensive source for up-to-date SBA 7A and 504 franchise loan performance information. And it's the go-to report for SBA and non-SBA lenders across the country. I believe that's been around since 1993, or at least that's when you started Coleman Publishing.
Right.
When and why did you begin publishing the Coleman Report on franchise loan performance?
I started the newsletter in 1993, just for the industry, for the small business banker. And then seven, 8 years later, I stumbled purely by accident on SBA's database and realized they had a whole wealth of information that was sitting there that wasn't being utilized or analyzed by anybody. And for the first time, it was that banks are very private and they like to hold on to their statistics, and it's very difficult for them to share information. So for the first time, we were able to get a hold of this information, and there was a national database on performance, not only franchisors or franchisees, but also for all small business loans. And then we could very quantify not only how a Subway was performing, but also how all restaurants in general were performing, broken up by quick and by a full service. So it was something that it was a very valuable tool for my clients and my niche, and those are the banking and the bankers.
Very interesting. I talk quite a bit with Joe Caruso, who reached out to you to bring you on as a guest on Franchise Today. And as I said at the beginning of the show, and as you heard him, Joe is on the line with us today. And I talk a lot with Joe, and we can't seem ever not to address finance and franchising. I know it's a topic dear to his heart. So I would like to include Joe in today's conversation, probably even more than he's done in the past. Joe, what have you got to say about franchise finance today? Kind of give us a little bit of insight on what you hear from the trenches, if you would.
Well, what I'm hearing from primarily from franchisors and from some franchisees is that they're getting qualified candidates for the most part, and a lot of the loans, the borrower is attractive, the loan is attractive, but the loan amount is unattractive. It's like they're not borrowing enough money to make it profitable for the lender to originate the loan. And I'd be curious if that's something that is common across the board in terms of SBA financing.
Bob, I just wanted to preempt this with something because it is fairly breaking news because of the State of the Union the other day, and with Joe's question in mind, also, if you would touch on your appearance yesterday on Fox News, where you were talking about Obama's failure to talk about small business in that State of the Union address, and also, of course, what Joe's been hearing out on the street.
Yeah, and I'm going to preface my remarks by saying I'm not a partisan guy on this small business financing, franchise financing. These are bipartisan issues. So when I criticize the president, as I'm going to, it's not because I think the Republicans have all the answers. But it was embarrassing to the president, to the administration. I was asked to be on Fox News to comment on President Obama's small business agenda, and we had set this up about a week ago, so of course we didn't know what was going on. And I went on and said, I got nothing. This is going to be a short conversation. He mentioned small business once. And it was a throwaway line that, well, small business, we need to give them tax incentives so they can pay more for their people. Well, that's not what small business wants. What small business wants is access to capital. We are, and of course, the easy answer is we need to keep our small business surviving until the unemployment gets down to a realistic level where we get the GDP growing again. But you're absolutely right. Access to capital is the hot topic. It's what we're all concerned about. It's what I track, and it's very, very complicated. Now, we need to keep this in perspective, Paul and Jill. The conversation we're having today is a whole lot better than we had 2 years ago, but it is still a difficult task to navigate through everything that's going on, and the lending environment has changed so much in the last 5 years. We need to remember that. We can't forget that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, technology is great, but I actually lost connection there for a while, came back, and it was great that you were still talking. Just people and
ideas. Maybe I was talking to myself. Maybe I was the one who was lost.
No, we've got a bunch of listeners on. All of a sudden, my connection dropped off, and I was glad to come back. And I think it just truly
I've been known to talk to myself.
They say it's when you answer yourself that's
there
the problem, right?
Well, and I'm going to go ahead. You're probably going to ask the question, but I'll just go ahead and jump ahead. And the question is, so what is different? And the banks I talk to, they're going old school. Bankers found out that, let me give you a little professorial thing. For banking, every beginning banker, junior lender, day one, they teach you the 5 C's of credit. And that's pounded into the banker's head. The 5 C's are cash flow, collateral, capacity, conditions, and character. And they drum that in your head. Well, back 10 years ago when you had that executive retiring out of Seattle from Boeing, they had a couple hundred thousand in the 401k, and he or she wanted to open up a franchise, pick the subway down in Yuma, Arizona. they went and said, hey, we have a couple hundred thousand dollars in equity. That was a no-brainer. You could get financing all day long. Well, today, what the banks have found out, all that collateral that they had, the real estate collateral, that wasn't worth a lot. When we talk about capacity, that's the borrower's reserves, and we found out that that 401k became the 201k. The significant other lost their job. There was no health insurance. So the personal situation was deteriorating. Cash flow, well, sales were down, and sales are down. Sales strictly impact profitability. So people were losing money and not generating cash to pay off the loan. Conditions, obviously the economic conditions were horrible, and that left character. So the big change is that what I found, and for the people on the line, is when you sit across the table from that banker, that is the number one answer you need to satisfy for the banker is when things go south, what is my plan to make sure that the bank gets repaid? Bankers have a great line. They say, I lent you money to open up a store on Main Street. I lent you the money to buy that real estate. I don't want keys in the mail giving me the real estate back. I want cash. I gave you cash. I want cash back. It's a simple transaction. So, Paul and Joe, the biggest change that I see out there is a shift in the mindset, and people are really, really concerned about the character of the applicant and the character of how this person's going to operate that franchise.
You know, last year, Joe and I were both fortunate to be invited by Steve Caldera, president of the IFA, to the Small Business Lending Summit. I think we might have been some of the only people in the world that weren't from the financial community, even within franchising, or at least not at a high-ranking franchisor, CEO, executive, although we both filled that role in the past. Joe, just last week, you had as your guest at the Capital Area Franchise Association, where you're president, you had Steve Caldera as a guest. And although I wasn't there, I can't help believe that or think that he spoke about much other than franchise finance. What was the difference in his sentiment today, last week, as opposed to a year ago? Was there any difference in sentiment?
Yes. The topic of credit access or access to credit was a central point in Steve's presentation. And Steve spoke for over an hour. And the situation that that franchising is faced today is certainly improved. The IFA has made great strides in working on a bipartisan level with folks in Congress and folks in the Senate and with the administration to make this a central focus for the government to improve access to credit. And things are looking better. I mean, the SBA, Karen Mills, I believe, has been elevated to a cabinet-level position. So that certainly gives it more prominence, and they were
absolutely when I was criticizing the president for what he did in the State of the Union, you have to give him the definite accolades for elevating SBA to a cabinet position.
Yeah, so I think that is probably I think that the IFA and the NRA and the other sponsors of the Small Business Lending Summit can take some credit for providing that gentle, constant pressure to our elected officials to address this issue, because it's in our economic interest that these businesses get financed, at least the good ones. You know, if you have a good borrower, that they have the five C's nailed down, and they have a great concept, they ought to be able to get money. And I think that the efforts for the IFA in that regard under Steve Caldera's leadership, I've got nothing but respect, and I think that they're getting results. But Steve was quick to say they've got a lot more to do.
Absolutely. Steve has done a wonderful job in reaching out to the lenders and starting just the dialogue in terms of, hey, this is what's going on in a franchise, and educating the lenders about where they can get access to information that can make their job easier, absolutely.
Well, I think that when last year when we were in attendance at the Small Business Lending Summit, they took the organizers, and it wasn't just the IFA, but they really made this event a tough talk event. It was no holds barred. There were no things that were off limits. And it became apparent there was a lot of misconceptions in the lending community, and there was a lot of misconceptions that franchisors have about, you know, simple things like the five C's. And there was some heated discussions between some very high ranking people in some franchisor concepts, and I'm talking about franchisors with, you know, thousands of units and major lenders, and I think that a lot of great things were discussed. I mean, I think one of the main topics that was discussed there that was why isn't there uniformity between the various lending institutions on what information they require? If there were, it would be easy for a borrower to shop the loan. It would be easier for various lenders to know what the package is going to look like. But there doesn't seem to be that, and I think that was a great topic that came up there, and it was born out of one of those heated discussions.
You know, I know we heard last year at the Small Business Lending Summit about, you know, some of the particulars that they expected franchisees or franchise potential franchisees securing loans, and I'm sure it applies across the board to small business, and it seems a question that we hear about all the time with respect to SBA loans are about, you know, coding them and about them being coded accurately. So, Bob, getting a little bit specific here, why is it important that franchisors ensure that their franchisee SBA loans are coded accurately?
And when you're talking about the coding, that is a function that's very difficult because that is something that's done at the bank level, and they have to instruct SBA that, hey, this is a franchise loan for all their computer systems. But it's very simple. You had alluded to earlier that one of the problems that the banks have, or excuse me, I apologize, one of the problems that the franchisees have is the banks aren't lending them enough money. And when there's not enough money, it's a lower a dollar amount for the banks to make a lot of income. So the problem is they have a limited amount of time to underwrite these loans. And unfortunately, preconceptions and biases can come into it. And we all know this. I talked to a lender yesterday, to a franchise system yesterday with J.P. Morgan Chase, and they said, hey, you are on our list of no lending list. And the guy called me up, was all concerned. I said, well, that's just there is no national no lending list, but that's J.P. Morgan will not lend to that system. And very simply, they went to the statistics and saw that they had, over the last 10 years, they had a 40% charge-off rate. Well, the average is 20%. Now, don't get too excited by those numbers. Those seem like big numbers, but 20% over 10 years is 2% a year. And that's perfectly fine, and that's an acceptable level of loss. But the problem is if you do not, in your system, you may have 50 of them get financing through SBA loans, and you may have another 250 that got conventional financing or someone just paid cash for them. But your system is going to be judged on the performance of those SBA loans. And unfortunately, someone says, well, Bob, how come you can't incorporate all the conventional lending or all the how they're doing as a whole? And my response is, you know what, guys, that's something the franchisor needs to do. I don't have access to that information. Chase is not going to give me their portfolio for me to analyze and go through it. They tend to hold that close to the vest. SBA, we have those numbers, and appropriately so. Why? It's a government guaranteed to the bank, and government, it's public, and so that should be a public record, and it is. So we have that. So the very first thing when I talk to the franchisors, when I talk to the CFOs, you make sure that you clearly understand and go through for the past 10 years on how those systems performed. And if they closed, why did they close? Was the loan paid off? And give those statistics to the lender. And it's part of the education process. So that, back to your question, that coding is very, very clear. And for the people on the line, that's something out of their control. But what is not out of their control today is when you, going back to that example of that Subway shop in Yuma, when you, they walked in 5 years ago, they just wanted to have the Subway information or the franchisee information. Now they want to know the Subway information. And they're what I call their loan underwriting the franchisor as well. So you now have two hurdles. You have to convince them that you're a good person, but you also have to convince the bank that the franchisor is a good person, good concept. And I'll tell you one more thing, and this is key. Lenders had a preconception 10, 15 years ago that franchisors were only in business to do one thing, and that was to sell sites to franchisees. And a lot of lenders still have that preconception. So one of the first things out of the box that the franchisor has to do to answer the character question is simply, hey, we're not in business of selling franchise, you know, systems. Well, we want to do that. But where our commitment is to make sure that our people make money and become solid citizens in the community. And that's a, and that seems simple, but you, let's, you need to focus to make sure that you can get the banker over that test.
That's interesting. You know, I always find myself as I am sitting with guests like yourself, especially in an area that's such a hot topic, it really stems a lot of thought in my mind. You know, and with all that information, let's talk a second about franchisees. Do you find that franchisees are using all this type of information as part of their pre-purchase due diligence in comparing various franchise opportunities?
Are you asking me?
Yeah, I'm asking you. Yes.
Okay. The answer is, unfortunately, I tend to talk, the people I talk to didn't do that up front and now they have issues. So the peeps, every now and then I talk to a franchisee who has problems or whatever, and frankly, they didn't do their homework. I would hope that they are doing that, but unfortunately, there are people who don't, and they don't do their homework, and they get involved in something that they shouldn't. So that's my that's my little slice of the view of the world on that.
Well, you know, it certainly would make sense from a franchising perspective that a prospective franchisee would look at the Coleman report and see where the concepts that they're considering rank. It ought to be at least a checkbox on that list.
Yeah, absolutely. And the banks are using that sometimes just as a pass-fail test, and that can be a difficult hurdle to overcome.
Well, certainly for the franchisors that are not monitoring where they rank and the franchisors that are not tracking the various channels of financing that their franchisees have availed themselves of, and then they don't have an accurate comparison to the report that you compile.
What you just went through that list, say that with all of a sudden the banker across the desk is hearing that, and the banker's going, well, I'm not gonna, if that franchisor hasn't done the basic things, I'm not going to get involved. So you can actually, when you're rattling that stuff off, if you listen to it from the banker's ears, they're not going to touch it.
Joe, let me just get a halfway point here. This is Franchise Today. We're talking today with Bob Coleman, editor of the Coleman Report and author of the new book, Money, Money Everywhere, But Not a Drop from Main Street. And we're talking about franchise and small business lending and more lovingly known as credit access. Joe, you have something else to add.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to think about the bank executive and their mindset. And I think I've heard this comment many times throughout my career that no banker has ever gotten fired for not making a loan.
Absolutely.
And oftentimes they're not looking for yes. They're looking at the different ways that they can say no so that they can protect their butt.
Let me interject there, because I hate to be put in the position of the bank apologist. I don't know where I signed up for that, but let me put a little twist on it. And when you say protect their butt, what they're really protecting is, if you think about it, to sign off on a loan, they have to go through 7, 8, 9 layers of people to sign off on it. And each of those layers has a different perspective and a different constituency. And I'm talking about the immediate boss. I'm talking about the chief credit officer. I'm talking loan committee, the board of directors. And then that's just internally. Then all of a sudden you have layers of regulators. You got the SBA. You have the FDIC. You have the OCC. You have their CPAs. So to put it in that perspective, I'm charitable. You know, banks, you know, are my customers. So I try to see how they're thinking, but they have so many different layers to satisfy, and everyone has a different test. So I tend to put it that it's a very difficult process to take your loan application and navigate it through that maze of regulations and layers.
I think that's a fair and sincere response, and I don't think it necessarily is being an apologist, but I think what that really emphasizes is that sloppy loan packages, you're guaranteeing your own defeat.
Excellent
if you haven't
point.
Addressed
yeah.
all of those items that you just listed off, all of those concerns that lender has to use in their calculus in order to provide you with the money that you want to borrow.
I'll give you a crazy example. Take a community bank in Iowa. And unfortunately, I'm leaving my 80-degree weather, and I'm on a plane tonight to Iowa. And it's a community bank out of Cedar Rapids. And you want to open up a restaurant in Cedar Rapids. The community banks, not at the first 7 or 8 levels, but at the very last level, the regulators will come in, and the banks are being criticized for what? They're being criticized for having a concentration of loans in one geographic area, which is just crazy. So part of what you have to do at the very beginning is say, hey, I understand you have the Cedar Rapids community. I understand the economy, and this is how I'm going to make money in the Cedar Rapids area. And that's something that you should address all the way up front, and you don't even know why that's important. But it gets important at the very end when these regulators come and say, hey, you know what, 90% of your loans are in Cedar Rapids city limits, and we think that's an economic risk. And that's part of the crazy, difficult times banks have today.
And I imagine, Bob, it's all those crazy thoughts that were in part some of the reason behind you writing the new book, Money, Money Everywhere, But Not a Drop for Main Street. And I just wanted to point out a couple of things for our listeners. I read through probably 90% of the book. I love the way it has some very compelling questions right on the back, such as, why is Main Street empty today? Why is Walmart the number one killer of Main Street? You clearly define 10 things you need to know, do to get a loan. Right on the back, which is great. But I guess the question I really want to ask is, you know, why this book? Why now? And probably more importantly, what did the folks you interviewed actually have to say?
Great question, and it's one of those aha moments where I'm driving up my local Main Street. And this was end of 2008, beginning 2009. And all of a sudden, I focused specifically on what was happening. And when one shop closes, one restaurant closes, it doesn't register. But what I saw in terms of separating the forest from the trees, in bird's eye view, I saw place after place after place that was closing. A gift shop that had been around for 50 years, a gas station that had been in the family for 50 years, a restaurant. I mean, we're talking second generation family type businesses. I'm not talking the yogurt shop that's in and out in 9 months. And my observation was, if we had a General Motors plant and it was closing, everyone would be screaming from the mayor to the unions to whatever, but no one was saying that about what was happening on Main Street. And Paul, 65% of our jobs in the American economy are created by Main Street small business. And you could see we were going into the recession and things were going downhill, and it was very clearly impacted by what was going on Main Street. So the motivation for me on that was say, hey, guys, yeah, we need to take care of Wall Street. Again, here I am, the bank apologist. We have to do TARP. We have to do that. But if we're going to do that, that's fine. But let's also make sure that we take care of Main Street and we give them the capital and we give them the support so they can get through this 2 years without destroying family businesses, family legacies, and family wealth.
You know, in preparation for today's show, Joe spends a lot of time reviewing material and is really the person behind putting together the questions. And I always believe in giving credit where credit's due. And I know one particular question that he had was, you know, how did politics play out in bailing out banks and big business, and not even a thought seemed to be given to Main Street?
Yeah, and that's unfortunate, and you could say it is simply the small business don't have the access to the K Street lobbyists. When that corner liquor store goes out of business and there's five jobs, it doesn't register. When seven jobs are lost here, when three jobs are lost here, it doesn't register. It's very small. And unfortunately, it's a tragedy in that it is way down on the priorities. But and individually, you're right. Three jobs here, five jobs there. It's not going to impact the economy. But when it's multiplied and it's repeated hundreds of thousands of times, then that creates a crisis. So it's back to what we were saying in terms of who gets a seat at the adults' table. The head of GE is head of our job creation, And I always, that just scratches my head when Mr. ML is outsourcing jobs and closing plants and Main Street's creating 65% of the new jobs, and Main Street always leads us out of the recession. So putting Karen Mills, putting the SBA administrator in the cabinet is important. And these people are smart people. They understand what's going on. But unfortunately, Washington is 100% political based, and large banks can buy a lot of lobbyists in Main Street camp.
You know, as you mentioned, the adult table, I was immediately started thinking, more importantly, who's going to be left without a seat at the adult table when the music stops playing?
Oh, I like that, yeah.
You know, you mentioned the five C's, and I didn't see Cuervo as Jose Cuervo as being one of those five
C's. I think that's the sixth C, yes. I think
that's the sixth C. But, you know, character, you know, obviously is back in style for bankers in determining credit worthiness. And I read an interesting article in the Wall Street Journal Weekend Magazine 2 weeks ago. I was in Dallas. And there was an article in there about online reputation. And
right.
The article, did you happen to see it?
Yes, excellent. Yes, go ahead. I didn't mean to. It was very good. Go ahead.
Yeah, it was interesting how they were comparing this online reputation and where it's going to go as being paralleled with creditworthiness and, you know, the FICO score. and how some bankers are saying, you know, hell, we'd actually rather see, you know, see with quotes around it, you know, how an individual acts out in the business world, how they act with their customers, how they interact with their colleagues, take a look at their social life. Is this guy, you know, does he hang off the side of buildings for, you know, a hobby, et cetera, et cetera. It's really interesting how all of this is changing from a very specific black and white arena such as the financial world. What is your perspective to something that is as variable as the online virtual world?
Very simple. The first thing that you do or do it right now is Google yourself. Google your name, see what comes up. And part of your loan package, and to plug my book, I write about this in the book, is do the Google on your name and see what comes up. And you need to know that because guess what? The banker is doing that. And they can quickly find a whole lot about you. Google announced, there was an article in the news, it was a passionate, it said the information that Google gets from you just based on your online search history is worth $5,000 to someone. It's, and that's sort of scary stuff. So I wouldn't stay up at night worrying about that, but I would certainly know what's out there. And there's things you can do in it cheaply at zero cost to put that in. And, for example, I'm a big fan of doing press releases, and I'm not talking about hiring a PR firm. I'm talking about hiring a kid to write three paragraphs. You can put it up on these free press release sites and don't get upsold, but then that goes into the Internet. And you say, hey, and press releases are, I'm opening a store, I'm expanding, I'm doing this. And also what that does is that comes to the top of the search. So if you have something that is a bad newspaper article on you or whatever, you can't control it, but you can manage it, but you certainly need to know what's in there. And if, for example, if there's someone out there who has the same name, there's a Bob Coleman out there who, believe it or not, his hobby is ferrets. He's the national ferret expert. Well, I don't think anybody cares if that's my side hobby, but if you have a name that there's someone that's done some nefarious stuff or has been arrested or whatever, you need to let them know and say, hey, I'm not that person.
Yeah, it's important. So basically, if today's loan applicant isn't pretty in terms of character, will lipstick ever actually help?
The answer is yes, absolutely. There is no such thing as the perfect loan application. There's no such thing as the perfect presidential candidate. So the old story is identify the strengths, but also I would identify the weaknesses right up front and address them and say, this is what I'm doing to mitigate it. You'd be very upfront about that. You can take the time, do your homework, and when you walk in, you have all the answers. We go back to the earlier conversation we had with, well, Sally and Jack, you want to open up a Cold Stone Creamery here in San Fernando Valley. Just out of curiosity, how's been the performance of the other ones in the valley and how many are there? And if they look at you with blank eyes, you haven't done your homework, and it's going to be a very short conversation. So the answer is do your homework, mitigate the damage as much as possible, but sell yourself on the character. And the next question is, well, how do you define character? And it's the old Supreme Court justice thing. I can't give you a good definition, but I know it when I see it. So, you know, somebody who's been in the community for 20 years, someone who's involved, well, they do the Google search and they found out you're the past president of the Little League, or you're part of the chamber, and you are part of the Elks and whatever. And those type of things go a long way to say, hey, this is someone who's established, people know them, and I think they're going to have a better chance of succeeding than our poor retired couple out of Boeing who are moving to Yuma and who don't know anybody.
Joe, we talked a lot about the five C's of credit. And I know and I recall we talked about, you know, aligning them with franchise candidate requirements. Did you have a specific question for Bob with respect to that?
In terms of what franchise stores should do, I mean, how should, you know, I think the real question is how should they align the five C's with their qualifications from both a financial perspective and from a profile and character background perspective? You know, how does one mesh those together? What do you think the practices that you've seen that are effective have worked?
I tend to be on the side of simplicity and transparency. Make it as simple as possible. Don't throw a 3-inch complete loan application where you've written days and hours and months of data. They're not going to read it. I would make it very simple, and I'd almost have one page for each of the five C's in two or three paragraphs. Fine, I'm the banker. I'll read that. But character. I want to know if, you know, hey, guys, my spouse filed bankruptcy 10 years ago because we had medical expenses. I'm going to put that right up front. But I'm also going to say, hey, this is why we think this will work. This is my cash flow. Don't let the banker do that. And there are, I don't expect the people on the line to know how to calculate a cash flow, how the bank looks at it, or how to calculate collateral structure. But I tell you right now, get a hold of your local small business development company. There's 1,200 throughout the country. They're usually associated with a college. They have free classes on this. And guess what? Their job is to help people get loans. SCORE, retired service people, they can help you with that. Call your local, don't call them, go online, look at your local SBA office. They have a lot of classes. For example, I know Intuit will do classes, and we're talking $5, $10. So there are a lot of great resources. Notice I say don't talk to your CPA or your attorney. You don't need to go. I mean, if you want to go spend $500,000 to have them do it, you can do it. But they don't, they're not involved in getting loans. They're involved in getting money from you. That's sort of cynical, but that's my experience. Go to the people who help people get loans. It doesn't cost you anything. And make it very simplistic. Make it a very simple application, but have all the supporting documentation that you've done your homework. But say, hey, this is the test. I know that in this concept, 40% of them fail. But I am so good that I'm going to be a top 10% performer in this concept, and this is why. I know the area. I've lived here for 20 years. I've researched it. There's nothing like this in the marketplace, whatever the selling points are. And that's what I would do.
So I mean,
you're correct. You really,
we're almost into a full month of 2012, 1/12th of the year.
Wow.
Is almost done.
That's depressing.
Yeah, that is depressing. Looking back, Bob, on 2011, two-part question. You know, what did we see in terms of franchise financing, especially in the latter part of the year? And ultimately, who do you think were the franchise concept winners and losers in 2011?
The first part is SBA had the record year. They did over $30 billion worth of financing, 70,000 small businesses. When you talk about hotels, franchising hotels, I was at the AILS conference earlier this week, and 2 years ago, Paul, 100% of hotel franchise loans under $5 million had to have that government guarantee, had to be done. Today, 2011, that number's down to 90%. From $5 to $10 million, that number's down to 73%. So what that is telling me is the credit market is loosening up a bit, and it's certainly a whole lot better than 2009. So we are seeing movement, and we are seeing quality deals being done. It's the old supply and demand issue. You talk to franchises, you talk to Main Street, they're saying – there's no supply. We can't get the money. You talk to all the bankers, they're saying it's a demand issue. We do not have enough quality people walking in through the door. So the good news is if you convinced your banker, first of all, do make sure you do that. But there is financing for quality deals and for well-thought-out concepts. Second part of the question is winners and losers. I think that's pretty apparent. I always tell someone that if you're thinking of getting involved in a system, Quiznos, Google Quiznos, go on the Wall Street Journal blogs, read that mess, and realize, and you can say, well, that lot of it can't be true or whatever. The problem is the bankers are reading that too. So if you want to finance a Quiznos, you need to be able to say, hey, I understand what's on the Wall Street Journal blogs. Unfortunately, Wall Street Journal has a little bit of a high, brand recognition, and you need to be able to say, this is why that discussion doesn't pertain to my loan application.
Joe, if we're closing in 10 minutes left in the show to the top of the hour. I know we could probably talk all day. Do you have any parting comments?
I think some takeaways for the franchisors listening and those people charged at those companies with securing financing for franchisees. I think they really need to take to heart some of the basics that Bob's talking about in terms of the five C's and incorporating them into their templated loan packages and helping the franchisee borrower to craft the narrative so that it is easy for the lender to understand the borrower and say yes to that loan. Of course, having the right qualifications in terms of capital and net worth is important. But when you have that recipe for success, and then you incorporate these standards, because they're becoming more and more. I mean, they were standards years ago, and now Bob is telling us these five C's are back. You know, I think just about streamlining, making it easy, and making sure the story is told correctly.
Bob, your parting advice for franchisors and franchisees alike?
I think my takeaway is make it as simple as possible for the banker. Notice I'm saying we don't need to do hours and the pages and thousands of pages, 100 pages of research and whatever. I think and make it very simple, tell the story, and separate the forest from the trees. Guys, the reason why I want to open up a Panera Bread is there are no concepts within 7.5 miles, and this is in the last 15 that open, this is how they do when they go into that type of demographic area. Very simple. You know, just to say, hey, this is it. And yeah, you're going to have your supporting document. You're not going to throw the 50 pages at it. You're going to summarize it for them. And you're going to say, hey, you know what? I have $223,000, and it's coming from this source. My wife's 401K, and my mother-in-law is lending me money. Boom, make it very, very simple. And then finally, character. The reason why this is because I've always wanted to run this type of system. I know the area, and I'm going to be there 40 hours a week. I'm going to be on site, and I've already talked to the Rotary and the Elks, and they're going to show up, or we're going to cater it, and the mayor's going to be there for the ribbon cutting, and all of a sudden, and you tell your story, and you say, hey, I'm a solid citizen, I've always wanted to do this concept, and I'm excited, and I'm passionate, and I want you to be my partner.
And of course, Bob Coleman, as I said at the beginning and throughout, is the author of the new book, Money, Money Everywhere, but Not a Drop for Main Street. There's various things on the jacket alone that you'll find very interesting, but certainly no comparison to the great wealth of information in and throughout the book. Bob, if you would too, as we have a couple of minutes, tell our listening audience why they should pick up this book, regardless of whether or not they're looking for a loan or not.
Well, number one is, if you want to get a loan in today's environment, buy my book, $14.95 Amazon.com. if you want that, that's number one. That's why I wrote the book, is to help Main Street franchises get business. Number two, if you're a historian, if you want a better perspective on what's going on a very narrow niche of the economy in terms of what's Main Street, I think it's a fun read. I had a lot of information to draw upon, so it was pretty easy picking out what I wanted to focus on. But I wanted to give, there's a lot of economic books. There's a great book out there. He's a friend of mine. I'll plug it, Charles Green, the SBA loan book and how to get SBA loan. He'll tell you how to fill out the forms, and he'll do all that good stuff. But I wanted to give a little bit peek behind the curtain. I wanted for... I'm opening up the place on Main Street, and in today's environment, we expect everyone to be a Renaissance man or woman, having to be experts in accounting, marketing, finance, inventory control, product control. Obviously, that's the number one reason why franchisors exist. Franchisees tend to do better than mom and pop, and for that reason, they have help to do that. But I wanted to give a sort of behind-the-curtain look on the financial aspect on what the pressures the banks are facing and how they view the world and how they view you. And I also wanted to put a historical perspective that times have changed, and we need to realize that. And as you said, we're already 1 month into 2012, and I flash back on the things that I wanted to accomplish in the first 2 weeks, and I'm already behind. But I wanted to give a historical perspective on what the banker's looking at and how the world has changed.
Well, it's certainly a great book. It is an easy read. I love the short paragraphs. I love the storytelling. It really is a great book, and I wish you all the best, and I hope it hits the top of the charts in no time.
Well, you're very kind. Thank you very much.
And I appreciate you being here today on Franchise Today, and love to talk with you again in the future, maybe in the third quarter, and you can kind of give us an update of where the finance world is with respect to franchising and small business. Thanks again for being here.
I would readily accept. I enjoy speaking to your audience, and I appreciate you giving the time to talk. But I'd be more than happy to come back and talk to you anytime about hopefully – that we're going up, and hopefully in 6 months when we talk, it'll be much better as well.
I hope so. Joe, of course, I thank you for being on with us and putting together another just fabulous show. I always appreciate your insight and sharing of information as well. And let us know again, who do we have coming up in upcoming segments of Franchise Today?
All right, real quick, we've got Dina Dwyer Owens next Thursday. The following Thursday, pardon me.
Right.
And we've got Steve Caldera on the 16th, Nancy Weingartner on the 23rd, and we have on next Thursday the guest that you arranged for. So I'm at a loss on that one, and you can tell us who that guest is again.
Yeah, it's Stephanie Chandler, the author of several books, founder and CEO of BusinessInfoGuide.com. I think it's really going to give us some interesting perspective. And I chose this guest because at West Coast Franchise Expo, at Franchise Expo South, and I know again at the upcoming IFA convention, there's a lot of interest and still a lot of confusion with respect to digital marketing, social media, what have you. And I thought possibly this would stimulate some thought and questions leading into the IFA convention. And then, as you said, we'll have Dina, we'll have Steve Caldera, and then Nancy Weingartner, and we'll be preparing for the Franchise Legal Series coming up at the end of March and into the beginning of May. Again, Thanks to Bob Coleman today. Thanks to Joe Caruso. I'm Paul Segreto, wishing you the best, very best, in this great, great, great thing we call franchising. Franchise Today is out.